You're listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.
Rod Adams here from Annapolis, Maryland, and you're listening to Atomic Show number 24. This week, Shane Brown and I couldn't get together, so I'm posting an interview conducted on May 27th by the Mommycasters, Paige and Gretchen, two of the most delightful podcasters in the business. We talked about atomic power, and I explained why I thought that moms everywhere should know a little bit more about one of the most interesting and important topics around.
This is MommyCast.com, show number 90. This show is sponsored by Dixie.
Dixie and MommyCast, the perfect combination for the busy mom.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to MommyCast, the show for moms, by moms.
Never underestimate the power of a mom.
Hey, everybody. This is Paige and Gretchen
from MommyCast.com.
We're so happy that we have Rod, our friend, the commander that we've been talking about forever.
Yeah, I think he's probably almost our number one fan.
Oh, he's coming on the show.
Yeah.
Talk about his thing.
First of all, Rod, you are in the military. Can you tell us what branch of the arm of the service you are in?
I am an active duty Navy officer.
Okay. And you are stationed at the Pentagon?
No.
Are you stationed at?
Just south of the Pentagon in Crystal City.
Oh, okay. All right. So I knew you were going in that direction. I just wasn't sure, because you always tell us, email us, that you listen
coming
to us
from
on
Annapolis,
your commute.
Going down. Right.
Well, I listen to you guys on my commute from Annapolis, which is almost paradise,
yeah,
to Washington, which is a very pretty city, but not a great town to drive in.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not. Definitely. No. But why are you in? It's interesting because you have your own website and podcast.
Blog.
Yes.
Blog and podcast, and it's about atomic energy.
It's called Atomic Insights.
Right. And I'm wondering why you think it would be a good idea to talk to our audience about that.
Well, first of all, energy has always been a hobby of mine, but periodically it becomes important to almost everyone. I call myself a child of the 70s because I became really aware of the world in the 70s, and everybody talked about energy during that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when the big crisis happened. I remember the gas lines and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
You hear about that, but I think it's worse now.
Mm-mm.
No. It's not worse yet.
Mm-mm.
It will be, though.
It could be. But I remember gasoline going when I was a kid. We were traveling around the country in my parents' Volkswagen van. We literally would look for gas stations where the gas wars were in progress, and you could get two glasses with your fill-up, and gas cost a quarter per gallon.
Hmm. Wow.
And that wasn't that long ago.
No, that was in really the 70s. That was like 30-something, just 30 years ago.
Yeah.
That's frightening.
Yeah. In 1973, the price of oil was $3 a barrel. 1 year later, it was $12 a barrel.
And now it's 70-something, right?
Yeah, that's about where it is today, $70 a barrel.
Okay, so Gretchen and I were just complaining to you about how they've not made a hybrid van for us, and we're paying so much right now to fill up our tanks or drive our kids around doing all their stuff.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great, though, if you could get a van that would drive around for, say, 14, 15 years at a time?
Yeah. That would be great. So what's the solution, Rod?
Well, I don't know. I can't do it for a van, but I used to drive a zero-emission vehicle that was 9,000 tons. It was fueled with about a couple hundred pounds worth of fuel, and that fuel lasted for over 14 years.
Okay, you've got us. Okay, so what was that? Okay, it 9,000 pounds. Okay, that's got to be like a
tons.
Okay, so that's got to be like a major airplane or boat or.
It was a submarine.
Submarine, of course. Okay.
It was a submarine.
Like an atomic submarine.
Yes, it was.
Oh.
I graduated from the Naval Academy in 1981 and convinced Admiral Rickover that even though I was an English major, that I had enough skill with math and science to become a nuclear-trained submarine officer. And did that for about 12 years, including a tour as chief engineer on the USS Von Steuben, which was one of the 41 for Freedom. That was a boat built in 1962, and it was capable of what I just told you about. It was an atomic submarine with a fuel source that was completely amazing to me. And when I finished that job in about 1990, I started doing some independent research while I was on shore duty and said, why are there so many people that are so worried about energy? And remember, this was at the time of the first Gulf War, and yet so many people thought that nuclear power was so scary and something to be such afraid of.
And why is that?
I don't know. Someone figured it out.
Well, I think Chernobyl, you know, accidents like Three Mile Island and Chernobyl have not helped.
No.
But I was actually listening to something the other day that said, you know, while Chernobyl was a horrible accident, a lot of things have been attributed to that that perhaps were not actually caused by Chernobyl.
Yes. Chernobyl was definitely an industrial tragedy. About 31 people were killed rather quickly, within weeks or so after the accident, as a result of fighting the fires and mm-hmm. doing that kind of stuff. Some of them died from actual exposure to radiation, but some of them were killed by flames.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were burned to death. They probably would have died from the radiation exposure anyway because they were that close. But the area around Chernobyl was evacuated, and you know, people's complete lives were disturbed, and a lot of stress, and people have been told for the rest of their lives that they're victims.
Mm-hmm.
But the UN, the World Health Organization, and about three or four other major organizations did a very intense study at the 15-year point after the accident and came up with the realization that they could only attribute less than 50 deaths to the accident
mm-hmm.
and that perhaps as many as 4,000 additional cancer deaths in the population that had been exposed to radiation. That sounds like a huge number, but the population that was exposed would be expected to have something on the order of 4 million cancer deaths mm-hmm. during the course of their lives. So an additional 4,000 would be almost impossible to detect.
Can you ask me, can you answer, you know, what about the contamination fear? I mean, people think that it's still in the water now, and it's in the ground, and it's always going to be there. And I mean, is that? And then, of course, there was the radiation cloud that everybody was scared about.
Yeah, well, the radiation, or most of the radiation that came out of Chernobyl was short-lived radiation, things like iodine,
mm-hmm.
151, and a few other isotopes that are fairly large-scale releases from a nuclear accident. Some of them are long-lived. The uranium and strontium and cesium will be around for quite a while. And they can certainly measure excess dosage in the area.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm actually just started a fascinating book called Wormwood Forest by a woman named Mary Micello, who has gone into the area and discovered that it's probably now Europe's largest wildlife preserve.
Oh, really?
This area that was evacuated after Chernobyl.
And there aren't, like, frogs hopping around with, like, three eyes and all of that?
Well, no. Well, there may be, because, you know, there's a natural level of
I mean, we've got that here in the Potomac River,
right,
I've been told.
Right, there's, yeah. Well, it's probably even worse than the Potomac.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of chemicals in there. You know, there's a natural level of mutation. But, no, Ms. Micello actually went to that area as a Ukrainian American, and is expected to be telling the story of this, you know, tragic event that destroyed so many lives and things, and in the foreword to her book, she says that she has become a reluctant but quite strong supporter of nuclear energy, because she said that she's far more scared about things like global warming and two Iraq wars over oil. the potential for even more disruption than she is so much worried about, you know, accidents like Chernobyl, which, by the way, happened more than 20 years ago.
You know, it's interesting because when I was in, when I lived in California, we had San Onofre, which is nuclear power plants down south of Los Angeles. And then up in the Bay Area, we had the huge wind farms.
Right.
And so we were always, you know, it seemed like, you know, but yet we were the ones that got hit with the rolling blackouts, you know, so it's like, what is the deal there?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure, but I used to drive through those wind farms. I went to school in Monterey for a while, and it seemed to me that an awful lot of times when I would drive through there, there would be at least half or more of the windmills that weren't turning.
Right. I could never figure out what the method to the madness was on that. So do you think we really, you know, your opinion is that we need to move towards alternative forms of energy, obviously?
Oh, yes. Well, yeah. we need, I mean, energy is very important. We here in America, of course, are quite spoiled, love to be able to walk into a room and flip on a switch or turn on our computers or whatever. You know, I've been to places where electricity is not so common.
Well, I think we interviewed someone who is dealing with a lot of things that are going on in Iraq, and they get their power like 1 hour a day or 2 hours a day.
We've had a really hard time setting up an interview with her because their phone lines and their electricity is really not reliable.
Yep.
But I think that what she had said that they only get power 1 to 2 hours a day,
right?
And that goes for everything, including air conditioning.
Well, yeah, and you know, I used to run a small factory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no way that you could operate in and, you know, keep those people employed in a situation where you couldn't rely on your power.
That's true.
Bottom line, I do think that we need to take a real hard look at alternatives. And I've looked at all the alternatives that are available. I studied solar power. I studied wind power. I've studied, and I can't find anything anywhere close to as neat and as clean and as reliable and as cheap as atomic power.
Do you think that the technology has maybe improved? You know, it seemed like we were on a trend to do a lot of nuclear power plants, and then it got a bad rap, and a few things happened, and it made people very nervous, and then they actually think have taken a lot of them offline, if I'm not mistaken.
There were a few that were shut down. But there was a time when people thought that we would be shutting them all down.
Yeah, right.
And right now in the U.S. we've got 103 commercial reactors operating. It produces about 20% of our electricity. And even though we haven't built any new ones in the last, the last new one that was ordered in 1973. And the last one that came online in 1996 after a very extensive period of construction. But in the last 10 years, we have added the power from the plants that we have has been like adding another 10 plants because we've really worked hard in learning how to operate them better and operate them more safely. And yes, the technology that we have now is vastly improved over what was available in 1973 when the plants that are online now were first designed.
Okay, Rod, so paint a picture for me. Paint a picture for me in a world where atomic energy is what we use and we no longer depend on oil. What is that going to be like for me in my car? How is it going to work for my home? How is it going to be?
Okay, well, first of all, we can't power a car yet with atomic power and probably never will. And when I advocate atomic energy, I'm not saying that it's going to replace oil any more than wood replaced stone for building homes. It supplemented homes. You know, people still use stone for homes even today.
Mm-hmm.
We probably will still use oil as far as I can see, but we could use an awful lot less of it in things like power plants and ship propulsion and maybe even things like aircraft propulsion. Right now we burn probably a third of the world's oil in transportation. The rest of it is in industrial uses. If we were to reduce our use in those other places, there'd be a lot more oil left over for our automobiles. secondly, atomic energy could be used to help convert some harder to find and harder to use fuels into fuels that would be useful for driving your cars around. For example, the Germans used to use coal to produce oil back during World War II. But one of the reasons that people don't do that today is because it requires an awful lot of heat to do that process.
Mm-hmm.
Well, atomic power is a great source of heat.
Mm-hmm. So they could actually have like a factory that did that.
And that process is known as the Fischer-Tropsch process, and it's still in use in some places where there's really cheap coal, like South Africa.
What about corn? What's it called?
Ethanol.
Ethanol. What about that?
Well, ethanol is a great way to dispose of excess corn.
Well, it seems to me that we've got my family here. Here we go.
Okay.
I come from a family of farmers in the Midwest, and I know that, you know, there's an awful lot of subsidies going out to farmers right now. And it seems to me that if an industry such as ethanol could be established, wouldn't it boost our agri, you know, what is a very still very depressed area of our country?
Well, certainly it is. Like I said, ethanol is a great way to dispose of excess corn production. Now, in terms of energy use, when you count all of the fuel that's needed to go into the tractors and the fertilizer and everything else to plant and grow and gather the ethanol or gather the corn and then process it into ethanol, there's not really a huge energy gain. Now, Brazil, for example, produces an awful lot of ethanol for their automobiles. They produce it with a little less energy input because they have a whole bunch of people that chop sugarcane and carry it on their backs to the ethanol factories.
Yeah.
And
do you – I know, like, for instance, in California, like, I think it's up in the Sacramento area, 60% – of those houses are actually off-grid using propane. I mean, is propane an option?
Well, propane is another fossil fuel. Mm. I mean, it's certainly an option. It is another product, though, that comes from petroleum. I don't think that we can really dismiss any of our energy options, but here's what gets me excited about nuclear power. I mean, uranium is about 2 million times more energy per unit mass than oil. So if I had a pound of uranium in my hand, it'd be as much energy as 30 tanker trucks full of oil.
Can we mine uranium domestically?
We do. We have uranium in the U.S., but we don't produce very much right now. We have a lot of reserves.
I don't know. Is it a mining thing? I don't know. Where do you get uranium?
You mine uranium.
Yeah, okay.
But one of the neat things about uranium, from our point of view, the U.S., is that the major source of uranium right now are Canada and Australia.
Oh, okay.
And the U.S.
So nice countries.
Well, stable countries.
Well,
stable
countries.
Stable countries.
Who play nice.
countries that speak English and have stable governments. But the U.S. has a lot of uranium. And uranium is actually pretty well spread around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So why haven't we moved in this direction already?
Well, I'm at many times, although I'm a very optimistic and cheerful person, I am a business cynic. And if you look around the world and you see how much money is being made by selling coal, oil, and natural gas, you can see a natural group of people who are not so happy.
That will fight against it.
About the prospects of a fuel that is so much better than theirs.
Mm. Yeah, so I know it's a very political issue. There's no question about that.
Right.
And I think, you know, when you first, you know, talked to us about coming on our show and talking to us about nuclear energy, I kind of went, huh? But then I started thinking to myself, you know, we have always, you know, kind of said on our show that an educated mom means an educated family.
Oh, yeah.
And,
so important.
And I think a mom that believes in peace and tolerance means that you'll have children who believe in peace and tolerance. And so I guess in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, our country's facing a real crisis here. It's hitting everybody in the pocketbooks big time. It doesn't seem like it's going to get much better. We all, I think, feel that we need to explore these options. And I thought, well, okay, if we educate the moms, they'll educate their children.
So what can we do, Rod? What can we do to affect change?
Well, first of all, I think that the best thing you could do is learn more about atomic power and really ask questions and be a critical thinker. Like, I mean, moms are always out there researching and trying to find better ways to educate their kids or to feed their kids or to exercise or all those neat things. Well, go out there and find out. There's some great websites that have information about atomic power. And there's a whole bunch of people who are fairly similar to me who have dedicated their lives to learning more and to sharing their knowledge, people who are professionals in the nuclear industry. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, people discount, well, you're just in the nuclear industry, you're a spokesman. No. First of all, I'm not in the nuclear industry. I'm nuclear trained, but I have never worked in the nuclear industry, and I certainly don't get paid to do what I do, although I hope eventually to get paid.
Mm-hmm. No, it's clear that it's a passion of yours when it seeps out of your professional life. And
I think that's key because, you know, as I just said, it's a very political issue.
Again, if you can run this stuff inside a sealed submarine.
Did you live on that submarine?
What's that?
Did you live on that submarine?
For about 2 to 3 months at a time.
What was that like?
Well, it was interesting to be sealed up with 150 of my best friends.
Yeah, no kidding.
It was, from the mom's point of view, when I came home, the most important thing my wife said to me was, leave your sea bag in the garage.
I don't want
to smell
that. Don't
bring that smelly thing in the house.
Yeah, right.
I could smell it just thinking about it.
It was, I have a couple of books around the house that still smelled slightly of submarines.
What does it smell like? I mean, it's not oil, right?
No, it's a unique odor of
of men,
50 men,
woo-hoo.
And maybe a little diesel fuel because we do have an auxiliary diesel that we run for emergencies and to test it in drills and that kind of stuff. Cooking oil, all kinds of stuff. Back in the day, we used to have quite a few smokers when I first started, was kind of crazy.
So you guys didn't carry Right Guard on there with you?
Well, we had limitations on what we could carry because of the fact that of an atmosphere contaminant. It was all stick deodorant and that kind of stuff. And
so nothing aerosol?
No aerosols, no, not allowed to do that.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's interesting. No kidding, though.
You know,
you
can buy a ticket and go onto a nuclear sub in the Inner Harbor. I think they have it right next to
That's a nuclear sub?
No, that's a diesel submarine.
But I thought it was a nuclear sub.
It's still pretty cool to go on board. There's quite a few subs around. The only nuclear submarine that I know of that you can tour is the first nuclear submarine, the USS Nautilus. It's available for tour up in Groton, Connecticut. And it's a fascinating museum up there. You can't go into the back end, but you can see what the front end looks
like. What's in the back end?
The secrets.
That's where the engine is.
We don't want our enemies to know.
Oh, well, it's a steam plant.
Right.
Okay? Yeah. It just has a neat heat source.
Yeah. Right.
Wow, that's so amazing.
It is amazing. You know, we have submarines these days. The USS Virginia, a friend of mine actually was the lead engineer for the production of that ship, project manager named Willie Hilardis. He's now a rear admiral. But that ship went to sea with a load of fuel that will last its entire life, 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool.
That is really cool. I mean, I've never heard that before. That's really amazing.
You know, my brother-in-law was talking about that the other night. We were discussing that. Actually, somebody was asking me, what's your next interview? And I said, Rod Adams. And what is that? And, you know, that was, what is he into? And we were talking about it. My brother-in-law is really, really into nuclear energy, too.
And you said, wasn't one of you, didn't one of you have a grandfather that was in the nuclear?
Yeah, my grandfather. Isn't there a nuclear power plant in Missouri?
Yes.
Yeah. I think he ran that one for a long time until he retired and they moved to Nevada.
Cool.
Yeah, so they were into that. And I think my aunt... See, you can just tell that this is kind of stuff that I zone out a little bit. It's just not my forte.
It's not music, right?
It's exactly right. So, yeah, I think my aunt, she has a company that kind of develops security, like security measures for power plants,
mm-hmm.
where you can run, you know, emergency trials and stuff.
Oh, neat.
So...
Very cool.
She's got computer system. I mean, her company sells computer systems and stuff like that that are emergency systems for the power plants and stuff. So that's interesting. She said something like, so people were asking her, well, how do you know if it really works unless it's really actually blowing up? She's like, I don't know. How does your fire alarm, your smoke alarm go off in your kitchen when you just smoke frying chicken, you know?
Yeah,
right. It's like, it works.
By the way. Smoke alarms is an interesting atomic topic.
Oh?
Because, yeah.
Listen to him, like his teasers.
Yeah, I know.
Smoke alarms have a very small amount of americium in them, and that's how they detect whether there's smoke or not, because it is emitting a little bit of radioactivity, and when that smoke goes in there, it disturbs that field, and it can be detected.
Hmm.
But it's a very tiny amount.
I had no idea.
Yep.
What is americium? I don't want to sound stupid.
Americium is what's called a transuranic. It's like 251 is its atomic mass. So it's a very heavy isotope that decays with a alpha particle.
Okay, that
she still doesn't know what it is.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. I don't want to get technical here because, you know, I don't want people's
my eyes just crossed as we were going about it. Subatomic particle isotope. Oh, too many words that I don't know.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. You guys are smart ladies, so you can learn this.
We're trying. This is why we're talking to you. I think it's important. I think moms need to know.
And of course, I know I listen to your show partially because I'm a dad of two daughters. And
congratulations, by the way, on your daughter getting married not too long ago.
Oh, thank you. Thank
I was going to say, congratulations. I think they were born like 20-something years ago.
No. Remember he sent us the picture of him walking his daughter down the aisle.
Get out. I never saw that. Why are you stealing the emails?
I didn't steal the emails. It's in there.
It's not in your email.
Did you send it through Gmail?
Yes.
I need to go find that. I never saw that.
You know, she's an ensign in the Navy. Married another ensign who is, you know, I'm quite proud of my son-in-law who's now in the second phase of nuclear power training in the Navy. So.
Oh, you know what? It's always good when your daughter brings home a guy that can talk shop with daddy.
That's right.
Yeah. Cool.
My dad's a lawyer. I married a lawyer. And it's always nice to see them getting along. Well, my dad's like, this is the son I never had. That's great. Well, thanks, Rod.
Yeah, thank you for talking to us. It's been fun talking to you, finally. We've been emailing back and forth for a long time.
Can I put in a shameless plug?
Oh, yes, sure. Absolutely.
Okay. In all those websites I talked about that are great information sources, there are two that I highly recommend, atomicinsights.com.
Of course.
And then my blog at atomicinsights.blogspot.com. And then I have a podcast at atomic.thepodcastnetwork.com.
So okay.
I try to share as much knowledge as I can, and please, parents, if you got any questions, ask.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be linking to your website.
So. Oh, that'd be great.
Definitely. Thanks, Rod.
Thank you so much.
It's been really fun.
You guys have a good evening.
We'd like to thank Rod Adams for taking the time to speak with us today. Also, don't forget to enter the Uncle Ben's Whole Grains Made Easy recipe contest. For more information, click on the link on our website. You could win a trip to New York City to a culinary school and a year's supply of Uncle Ben's whole grain rice. Good luck!
You're listening to the podcast network. Listen. You're listening to the podcast
network. Evolve.
Listen. Learn.
Evolve.